All right. Hi, everybody. It is RCFB Talk 39, and we're going to be joined by Home Field Apparel CEO and founder, Connor Hitchcock. My name is Bobak Hayeri. I'm going to be joined, as always, by my co-host, JD Moore, and Sirius. So let's go ahead and add everyone, and I see our guest is here as well. There we go. Oh, whoops, and there we go. All right. So, JD, Sirius, thanks for joining us. And again, thank you for joining us, Connor. Is everything working on your end?
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is the first time I have been on the opposite side of the Twitter space. We used to host a ton of them for a lot of our launches, so fun to be invited to one. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on board and spending a little bit of time with us. So, if anybody knows anything about college football apparel, they know the good brand. I'm right now rocking my Tulane Angry Wave in the beautiful powder blue. I've been a longtime customer, and even though Home Field is not a sponsor yet of Reddit CFB Talk, let's exchange a couple more emails. I have been a longtime customer. I just dropped a bunch of money on the brand new TCU line. Huge fan of the comfortable apparel, their hoodies, their crew necks, their shirts, the joggers that need to be much more available. But Connor, we really appreciate you coming on out here. Real excited to talk with you for a little bit about everything that's going on with Home Field Apparel, big news Saturday, and you know how you built this company up together.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking college football internet, t-shirts, of course. So yeah, I'm really jumped at the chance to come hang out with you guys here. So really appreciate it and all the support, of course. The Tulane Green Wave shirt is top 10 all time for our website, despite having many Power Five. So I'm very happy you have that. And yeah, Tulane, the TCU is feels to me like another one of those schools, though a bigger brand than Tulane, that will be, just the color combination and the Horned Frog mascot being different in general, that will stretch across many fan bases that, just aren't TCU fans. So I'm really excited for that one too. It's had really good response so far.
Listen, that whole collection was incredible, but most importantly, you had the frog with the fur jacket holding up the pennant. Slippery Rock walked so that the horned frog can run. But Connor, again, appreciate you coming on. You're known as the good brand
Yes.
with a sentient Twitter account, and you have a lot of beloved products by college football fans. But y'all didn't start all the way up here at the top. Y'all started a little bit at the bottom. What got you into the shirt and apparel game to begin with?
Yes, the bottom being my beloved Indiana Hoosiers football, as the bottom there. No, we began. Home Field was co-founded by myself and my co-founder, obviously, but also my now wife, Krista, when I was a student at Indiana University. The predecessor to it basically was a local company called Hoosier Proud. We made stickers, t-shirts for the state of Indiana, and just like tourism stuff that a bunch of local shops in the state picked up. When I was in school, about 30 stores across the state carried Hoosier Proud, and I would literally print the shirts in my apartment in Bloomington. Very very picturesque founding story, I suppose, right? People finding things in garages, and we were printing in apartments. But with that, when I was in school, Indiana lined up for a field goal one day in the Pinstripe Bowl against Duke. And prior to the two Tom Allen years of making the bowl, under Kevin Wilson, this is the first time we made a bowl in like 9 years. And it was a Pinstripe Bowl, seemingly meaningless. I'm sure many people who follow this account and who are listening know, because you are deep in the weeds of college football, if that is the case, that Indiana lined up and kicked a field goal that looked like it was good. It was called no good, and they ended up losing the Pinstripe Bowl. And so a thing was going on Indiana Twitter at the time, kind of tongue in cheek. Everybody kept saying the kick was good. Because I mean, really, how angry can you get about a missed field goal in the Pinstripe Bowl? but we were getting very upset online about it for fun, just as fans. And so this little side project I had, which now was still happening when I was working full time in Indianapolis, going into the 2016, I made a shirt that didn't require licensing. It just said the kick was good on it. And, you know, it's not a great design shirt at all. I designed it. I'm not a designer. But it sold hundreds within the first hour or so, which was, I mean, more than I'd sell in months on this little side project through my website. And so, you know, revealed to me, maybe, you know, this licensed college apparel has a bigger, bigger market than state of Indiana tourism apparel, a state that has like no tourism. So that's kind of where we got the idea for, you know, we have the design chops with Krista, my wife and co-founder. She's an actual designer, and my background's in marketing. So we got licensed for a few Indiana schools, IU, Purdue, Indiana State, Ball State. Those are selling well, well enough to the point where we're like, I think we have proof of concept. And we left our jobs in 2018, just the two of us, to start Homefield, licensed for 8 schools only in Indiana to start, launched with the whole new brand. A lot has happened in between, a lot of ups and downs, but now we have 150 schools we're licensed for, and we have 30 employees.
Wow.
So it's been quite the roller coaster for the last 4 years.
So what was the process like in those early shirts? Like, you know, how was your manufacturing set up to even do that? I mean, you know, it was in your garage.
Yes.
Trying to make 100 shirts all of a sudden.
Yes. It's literally, well, so when we moved up to Indianapolis after school, it was in our basement, in our condo. And then when we moved into a house, into our house, and then we've had 4 offices since then in 4 years. So it's just been literally like, yeah, I would get up when I was doing it as a side project. I'd get up before going to work at like 5:30 in the morning, print shirts for a few hours. And then you have to cure the ink. And normally what we have now, these massive conveyor dryers. But back then I would have to rig a system up, to basically find a way to get the ink to, you know, 300 degrees without burning the shirt. And so lots of trial and error in our basement for a few years there.
So now you've gone from making shirts in the basement to, I believe you are on your second warehouse now, third warehouse now with the 30 employees?
Yeah, it was the second, like, official warehouse. The third thing it's the fourth place we've used as a warehouse. So we had an office, our first one when we launched Homefield, was just the two of us, and we hired a third team member. That was 800 square feet of carpeted office that we were printing on, which ink is messy. And so we definitely lost our security deposit there. And then our second, our second office was a converted retail space that we called a quote unquote warehouse. Like, we were getting all this electrical put in that you would not get put in a retail space, but just what we could grab. And then the last two ones have been, you know, legitimate warehouses, big warehouses. So now we're in Speedway, which is a neighborhood in Indianapolis, which you could guess is right at the foot of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is really fun.
Roughly about how many shirts do you think y'all are pushing out on a weekly and annual, of measurable basis?
Whew. So I have to be a little careful, things I can and cannot share. But it's thousands a week we're pushing out easily. Every single week, and then hundreds of thousands annually of shirts. We've had great both luck and just success with connecting with people, particularly on Twitter, but tons of other ways too, in person when we have been able to, in college football, college basketball, baseball, softball, all these ecosystems of people who love their schools, or they just love, you know, the just overall ethos of college sports. It's different than the pros, which I love pro sports too, but there's just such a communal aspect. And so, you know, we've been fortunate to be able to really connect quickly with people in that way, and we've seen pretty quick growth as a result of that.
It's been clear that for y'all's rise, social media has been a huge cornerstone of your company's success. How did you decide on this was going to be our company's singular voice? I know you mentioned the Indiana game.
Yes.
But what made you decide we're going to continue with this as a business tactic for multiple years to go?
Yeah, that's a great question. It wasn't the initial plan. So my background is in digital marketing. And so about 5 years ago, if you were going to start a company in the e-commerce space, there was a very defined and clear playbook. And I won't get too into the weeds, but I will tell you that still when I tell people our biggest driver of our revenue is our organic Twitter account, that I have never met another e-commerce brand where that is the case. But, you know, if you talk marketing, it's really about, I mean, you could go classic with the people, place, price, and promotion, but it's about understanding how you can get the right product to the right people. And when it comes to college sports, where are those people? And so the most diehard people who know all the logos, there's some people who know all the logos we put out for a collection, which is crazy because we spend so much time researching it, but so do they for their teams. The place that people go to talk about college sports is either message boards, which we don't do too much in message boards, but the big one, especially in a generation I'm a part of, the 25 to 35 year old millennials right now, is Twitter. And it's where I, as a fan, would read about Indiana football, very niche topic, despite being a Big Ten university, you know, but it's where I found community with people. And I would go and I go to bars and watch games with people because they were living in Indianapolis talking about IU football on Twitter. And so we were really able to tap into that community. And then for our Twitter, what we say, you know, nobody wants to follow a brand on Twitter. That's why the whole good brand moniker started, because we were just kind of joking. You know, we'd say like home field, like comma, the good brand, like pointing out like every other brand is boring on Twitter, but we're just going to get in front of the joke that we're a brand on Twitter. And talk in a voice, irreverent is not the right tone, but we just like to have a lot of fun, right? If we're going to, there's no use in us putting a bunch of tweets out that say, buy this shirt, that get like zero retweets and two likes. You know, we want to be engaging. If we're going to do something, we want to do it well. And we want to, I mean, we make t-shirts at the end of the day. It's literally one of our core values is, you know, we're not saving the world. We make t-shirts. So if we're going to make t-shirts for a living, might as well have fun with it, right? And so that's where our Twitter account, you know, we don't poke fun at the universities or they're our partners, right? We're not going to do that. But, you know, we'll poke fun at ourselves a ton or, you know, be kind of just beating others to the punch that we understand that we're a brand talking as though we were a sports fan with our Twitter account. And it's worked. It's been great.
Talking about social media and how much that's helped you with your marketing, what about Big News Saturday and kind of how that started, how that's helped you really grow things? Can you give us a little bit of insight into that, how that's developed over time?
Oh, absolutely. So for those who don't know, Big News Saturday is a marketing campaign, for lack of a better term. We began in 2020, and the concept is that every Saturday at noon Eastern, we launch a school we have never had on our website before that we just got licensed for with a big 15-piece collection. It's a ton of work on our end, but it's really fun because all week, we're in the middle of it right now with Nebraska, with us, our name being Cornfields this week online. But all week, we're just teasing out Nebraska designs or, you know, we'll, you know, post an image from a famous game and get people all excited and riled up. And we get to meet. I mean, right now we've made connections with hundreds of people we've never talked with before online. And it's a fun experience for us. And we get to do it every week. But that started in 2020. And the genesis of it was we had, you know, 7 or 8 schools we knew we needed to launch. At the time, it was Tulane, Hawaii, a few others. And we were just figuring out, you know, how do we launch these in a way that we can maximize? I mean, as a brand, frankly, right? Which is what we joke about all the time, maximizing our revenue with a launch, you know, taking as much of our customers' money as possible, which is a thing we joke about all the time online. But really, you know, how do we do it in an engaging way? And so in 2020, If you remember, this global pandemic began, and if you've heard of it, the novel coronavirus. And I just
never heard of it. No idea what that is.
Oh, buddy, you have some Googling to do. But, you know, we decided, or I remember every night, every Sunday night, sitting down for appointment television viewing for The Last Dance. And, you know, that's the way we used to treat television, right? And the reason everybody got so into it is because nothing was going on. And it was something communal we got to experience together. I remember I had to have Twitter open. My wife would always be like, why are you on your phone? Like, you've been waiting all week for The Last Dance. And I was like, well, no, I have to experience this with other people who are saying funny tweets about Michael Jordan or the security guard, the Jerry Curl, who's like, you know, put his hands up after he beat MJ at that game they'd made up, right? So there was something communal about it, and there was this anticipation. And so I remember I was sitting in the chair. I'm literally sitting right now on my front porch thinking, like, well, is there any way? I mean, we were such a small company at the time, literally like five people. Is there any way we can create something like that? Which sounded crazy. Like, how could we get thousands of people tuning in for a product launch that we do? But that's what we ended up doing. We decided to call this thing Big News Saturday. We said we were going to have 15 schools that we were going to launch every week for 15 weeks in a row, and build anticipation for it all week. And we actually only had 7 schools on board at the time, which was fun. But once it started with Tulane in week 1 and Hawaii in week 2, a bunch of other schools started paying attention because there was nothing going on online. Nobody's doing anything Saturdays at noon. And it kind of gained a little bit of a cult following on college football Twitter. And to the point where, you know, we started the season with Hawaii and Tulane, and we ended that season because schools kept reaching out to us like crazy to be a part of it with Michigan and Alabama, which was crazy to go. I mean, we were at the point too, where we were, right now we'll design things 3 to 6 months in advance before they launch. So everything you see with Nebraska coming out this week was literally designed in like January or February. But we were designing things 4 days prior to launch. It was the most insane period of time in my life going through all this. But yeah, so we started that in 2020, and we're on season 4 of it now here in summer 22.
So, I mean, I just have to say, I think it makes total sense that, you know, sports Twitter is obviously probably the best kind of Twitter in a lot of ways. So that would be your built-in market right there. That makes complete sense. So, you know, of all those, launches, I'd love to hear what happened in the warehouse on one race. Florida shattered the all-time record in 2 hours. What was it like to handle that on the back end?
Yeah, so I can already see there's at least one person on our team who's listening into this who works in the warehouse, and so they're probably going to be laughing about this. It was chaos last summer, just cut and dry. We had to move warehouses in the middle of summer, and to your point, Florida, every week, fans started asking us how to, like, hey, can you show us how our launch is doing compared to other schools? And we're not going to put dollar figures out there. One time Darren Revelle did leak our sales, by the way, for a school, and that was not cool at all. Anyway, we're not going to put dollar figures out, for so many reasons, including our internal operating agreements. But we will just put a chart up so you can compare, you know, how your sales for the launch day are going, because sports fans are so competitive. If you go and look at that chart, which is, I think we tweeted it today or yesterday, you will see Florida has absolutely obliterated everyone. No one will ever touch Florida. I mean, we would like to challenge people to try. I cannot say to you how many more t-shirts Florida sold than any other school. For whatever reason, their athletic department was really on it. Like, the at Florida Gators account was literally tagging every person who had asked them for 2 years to get home field. They sent over 150 tweets saying, basically, like, time to pay the piper, which was very funny to see the Florida Gators athletic account be that take on our tone on Twitter. But then we have some great friends and Spencer Hall, Ryan Nanny, Richard Johnson, who are all Florida alums and huge fans. And they were pushing it really hard. It was just, and the collection was amazing. But to your point, the warehouse. So in a 4-week span, we launched Florida, Miami, Georgia, and Washington. And in those 4 weeks, those three of those schools, Florida, Georgia, and Washington, ended up being our top three launches at the time of all time. And we moved warehouses the day of the Washington launch. So we already will print thousands of shirts in advance for a Big News Saturday. We did not have enough for Florida in advance. We did not have enough for Georgia in advance. And we thought, okay, well, Washington will be calm. It's West Coast. You know, we don't have that many West Coast schools. It was not like without saying the actual numbers, like we were at 1.3 weeks behind on fulfillment, and we were doing everything we could to fulfill. And that, you know, it sounds fun. Like, oh, you do all these sales. It's great. But it's not great on the other end as a customer when you want to buy from this brand that you hear all these great things about, and then you get your shirt 3 weeks after you bought it. And it was just a huge stress on our team. And so we've taken, all measures of the team, obviously operations, the most, but customer service too, because they're the ones that are customer facing and having to answer the questions. Why is my package here? Why are you the worst company in the world? Yada, yada, yada. So we've taken a lot of steps, to improve our operations since then, which has been great. But yeah, it's, that 4 week stretch there of our three best days in a row coming three out of the four Saturdays in a row unexpectedly while we were moving warehouses, which is not an easy task, but had to be done. That was probably the most stressful time in my professional life, I have to say. I was up till 3 a.m. I remember 1 week, 7 nights in a row. It was I will never return to that time. And I've done everything in my power to make sure we never will.
All right. Well, in a related behind the scenes thing, one of the things that came in our Twitter replies,
yes,
when we first announced this space, was somebody had mentioned to us a story of a behind the scenes incident, something to do with a laptop and a heat dryer press and some kind of disaster that happened behind there. Yeah. Based on that laughter, I'm guessing there's a story and I would love to hear it.
Yeah, this individual works for Homefield and was on the Twitter spaces a few minutes ago and does not appear to be anymore, and warned me today that they asked this question and I didn't think it could ask. So that's why I'm laughing. We have a conveyor belt dryer that you cure the t-shirts with. And one time, basically, not to get too into the minutia, when you shut it off, you have to leave the belt slowly running because the heat takes a while to cool down and you don't want to stop the belt because you don't want to melt the belt, right? So sometimes we'll leave it running ever so slowly on over the weekend. And I one time put my laptop down on it thinking it had stopped, like it was stopped because it was moving so slowly. And then I walked around the warehouse for 35 minutes on a Saturday trying to find my laptop, only to find that it was in the dryer because the belt had moved ever so slowly for an hour and my laptop was just in the dryer. So it's not that exciting of a story, but that's what that was.
You mentioned that with the first plan for Big News Saturday that you had 8 schools in mind, you had agreements for 7.
Yep.
Which I'm assuming means that you didn't actually have the agreement for the 8th school finalized.
Well,
can you kind of talk us through like what the process is on your end for getting these agreements set up with the schools, the licensing rights and everything? And, you know, do they come to you? Do you go to them? How does that work?
Totally. Yeah. So it's kind of both. And so licensing with schools, every school will have a different agreement, right? You know, some schools will say, hey, our royalty rate is 18%. So if every $100 you sell with our marks, you have to pay us $18. And you report that to most likely what's called CLC. Most schools are represented by the Collegiate Licensing Company based out of Atlanta, Georgia. Now, the reason you get a school would license you, you know, some larger P5 brands, you know, we could sell a ton of t-shirts. We're not going to move the needle for them on a royalty front. Right? We're going to have to demonstrate that. I mean, most brands won't on a royalty front anyway, but it's more that, you know, they have a brand to protect. And so what value add can we be to their brand if you're a major P5 institution? So when we're talking to schools, we're saying, hey, we get this engagement online that, you know, you probably don't see with your other licensees. Here, let me show you, you know, how we got 10 million social media impressions for the University of South Florida when we launched them in like 5 days, right? Or, you know, we'll say, hey, we think there's a lack of vintage in the marketplace for your school. And there's probably reasons for that. Maybe the AD has said, hey, we just did a rebrand. We don't want vintage out in the marketplace because we got to establish a new brand. I mean, all sorts of reasons why somebody would or wouldn't license you. But when it comes to, you know, trying to convince a school, the biggest thing you have to show is what value add are you to them, not just it's more brand protection overall, because, you know, if they've already got somebody doing what you do, then you pose more of a risk than you would a value add. So you have to demonstrate the value add, right? At first, it was a lot of us pitching to schools because, look, we were two people that started out of our basement, right? We, even though we had business backgrounds and at the time thought we knew what we were doing, we were still at risk. And so it took some bigger institutions seeing us do well with smaller institutions and then taking a risk on us. So I'll always be grateful to some of those bigger institutions that first took a risk on us, like Indiana, like Purdue. Michigan State was very early on taking a flyer on us. UConn was very early that, you know, other schools could say, oh, wow, they did a cool thing with Michigan State. Maybe we should, you know, let them try with us or, you know, do a cool thing with UConn. So that's for it on our end. So you have to get licensed with the institution and then every design you make has to be approved by the school. So sometimes, you know, go ahead.
Oh, no. This is very interesting. I was actually curious how that process, how much difference is there from school to school, or does an organization like that middleman handle most of the interactions between you and the larger entity?
It depends on the school. Typically a larger P5 institution, they will have one individual whose sole job is licensing, even if they have CLC or Affinity or whatever other agency is in the middle. CLC is the large majority, I would say like 85% of schools at least are with CLC. But the school, you know, for a bigger institution, it's all dependent on the school, right? So, you know, some people say, why couldn't you have, did you like home field? Did you know that this logo existed? Why didn't you include it? And what we're not going to say publicly is like, you know, there's some internal debate between comms and marketing at XYZ school about this logo and if they want it out there. And so they didn't want to give it to us on the first run, right? Or, you know, hey, that for IU for a while, they didn't allow the most recognizable logo, the drop shadow, marketplace until it had been 20 years until the new logo had been established. So then we got right. It's a very good for 10, 15, 20 years, but they first want to see, like, hey, is this home field company legit? I hadn't heard of them because they literally didn't exist 5 years ago. You know, we'll let them use a few logos, prove that they actually know what they're doing, and then maybe they can use a few more. So it's all dependent on the school, right? And, you know, every school is different. Licensing sometimes sits in athletics. It sometimes sits in marketing and communications. And, you know, so I always feel bad for the schools we have where, like, a bunch of people are tweeting at the school. It's just kind of be like, hey, to get home field. But, you know, because there's just nobody quite, until you talk to the school, you don't quite know what their situation is with different marks or licensing or just marketing in general.
So on the subject of specific logos, can we address the infamous one, the UConn Sad Husky, and yes, how in the world you managed to talk them into letting you make a logo that is notorious for all the wrong reasons when it comes to like graphic design?
I think it's
and like the public perception of it.
It really is because their licensing director, he's great, Kyle, and he understands how the internet works. He's active on Twitter, and he's following the big, like, for example, the UConn account everyone knows, our beloved frenemy No Escalators. You know, he understands, like, hey, people have some weird affinity for this logo that was used for only 1 year by UConn. It's not a great logo, but they'll buy it. And so he leans into it. You know, it's a part of their history. And so, you know, it's not
bad. It's, you know, there's nothing hateful about the logo. It's just a bad drawing. It's not good. But for whatever reason,
Kyle is a unicorn in that. I mean, that is incredible. I'm amazed to hear that. That is wonderful. So
yeah,
I love the fact that it's literally labeled Sad Husky. That's my favorite part of the fact is that everyone is 100% like acknowledging the fact that, yeah, okay, we get it. It was a bad design.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's been enough time too, right? Because the other thing you don't want to do is throw someone under the bus who's still, you know, who had a hand in making that, right? That was a 1958 logo, right? But, you know, I think there are people who understand, like, we can lean into this, or even, like, now everything that's old is all of a sudden new, and people are nostalgic for things that people didn't like at the time. My experience is always Indiana being where I'm from and where I went to school, but, you know, we had this oval logo for 4 years when Randall L played for IU that looked just like the 49ers logo, and people thought it was ugly at the time. But because I grew up watching Antoine Randall L play football for IU, I'm nostalgic for it. And so IU wisely made it available a few years ago because they realized that people who were nostalgic for it were of age to buy apparel, right? So, you know, it's all about, you know, there's internal politics is too strong of a word, but there's internal politics at schools, and then, you know, people learning, like, yeah, we should probably maybe just lean into this because people are going to put it on Twitter anyway. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and just before asking this question, for those of you listening, this is RCFB Talk 39. We're here with Connor Hitchcock, founder and CEO of Home Field Apparel, which makes, as many of you know, especially if you're one of our followers, really awesome, you know, clothing. And I actually wanted to ask a bit about the design. Mm-hmm. Why did you guys approach it with kind of a lot of these vintage logos?
Yeah.
And how do you find them, and what is that research like? And I guess maybe that evolved a bit. I imagine in the early years, not that it's been many years, but at the early end of it, it might have been a little different than it is in this process now that you're more of a you know, you've got your machine going.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, we went with vintage because, frankly, it's what we like. We're really lucky in that a lot of founders of startups end up doing what they're doing just because they found, like, oh, this solves a problem, which it always should as a startup. But, you know, it may not be something they're completely passionate about. And I just have, you know, growing up in Indiana, you love college, you love all sports. But, I mean, the NCAA is based here. Once upon a time, the men's basketball team at Indiana University was really good. That was cool. But, you know, Purdue, men's and women's basketball has always been great. Like, there's just this, Notre Dame is based here, right? There's this culture of college sports. So I've always been really into it. And my wife, my co-founder, grew up, her dad played football at Michigan. And so she just grew up going to Michigan games every weekend. And so we just loved the aesthetic of 80s, 90s college football, basketball. And so those logos we were just drawn to, and it was something different. Now it's much harder to get licensed to use those marks. And we've been fortunate to be accepted into a program called College Vault that lets us use a ton of them that most people cannot. But yeah, that's kind of how that started. Now, when it comes to finding them, we go all over. I see here in the chat a great Twitter account you should follow, @College Sports Logos. We'll know as well, because this person I've talked to and know, you know, we know where to look for the logos. It's really all over, depending upon the school. There are physical archives. There are eBay listings. There are yearbooks. There are media guides. Honestly, media guides are probably the best treasure trove for all of these, because you'll see, like, oh, what was the Bradley Braves 1985 basketball schedule? And they'll list out their 20-some opponents and all their logos from, you know, 1985. But, you know, they're kind of all over. And it's really just what we try to do beyond just finding cool logos is we'll read yearbooks, like literally read the text to understand, you know, what was the context around a logo, or what was going on in the school? Were people excited about a certain sport, or did someone come to campus that year, like a big concert, or, you know, did the president show, you know, just trying to understand all that. And then also to see, like, what were students wearing then? You know, how was the logo used? How can someone who went to Mizzou in 1979 feel like they're buying a shirt that they would have seen in the campus bookstore that was cool in 1979, right? There's all of that. And so, you know, it started as Kristen and myself doing a lot of that. We have now a team of designers that does that. We like to work with outside people every once in a while just to get some fresh ideas in there. So, yeah, I mean, the design, that's no matter what great marketing we do or anything else, it starts and ends with having an amazing product, right? Like, the marketing doesn't matter unless it's a comfortable product and it looks great. So that research phase is key to what we do.
So how much of that, and this kind of, this goes back to something you kind of referenced earlier. Do you sometimes then just kind of find a group of these potential, I mean, because I imagine you have to clean them up a bit, especially if you're pulling it from a yearbook and sort of upscale it, or probably upsample it and sort of make it sharp again for a new print. But do you sort of take these and then have them presented to the school? And these are the retro logos we found, which are fair game for us to use.
Yeah, we'll do that, because what we don't want to do is spend a ton of time making designs. And then the school says, hey, actually, yeah, we can't use that logo because here's why. So we'll pitch a school, you know, 3 months out, 4 months out prior to launch. Like, hey, here's some design concepts we have. You know, what do you think? Would you approve this mark? And then we'll talk, get on a phone call and explain where we found it, what it means, yada, yada, yada. And a lot of the times they know. I mean, they're the ones that are the licensing directors for a university. They most likely have seen the mark before. And sometimes they do have a file for it, which is even better. But other times, you know, if they say yes, we'll vectorize it or recreate it or whatnot. So that's pretty much how that goes with the school, right? Because, I mean, everything, every single shirt that is on our website, every single sweatshirt has been approved by the university that we are licensed for, right? So want to make sure before we spend a ton of time that they're going to approve it.
Working with the different schools, has there been a moment where it really hits you like, we really made it, you know, where obviously you mentioned you started out with a lot of Indiana schools. Maybe there were some connections you had there that could kind of help, you know, grease the wheels a little bit. But was there one that reached out to you that you didn't have to go hunting for, that they popped in and you're like, oh, wow, like this is legit now?
Yeah, it was really funny. It's funny. I've made some great connections within the just athletic departments around the country and people working within college sports because of this job. And one of my favorites was when we launched Auburn. It was a great day. It was our best day in history. We heard from Alabama within like a couple days, like, hey, we got to make this happen. And then we launched Alabama, and that was the end of our first season of Big News Saturday. And a couple weeks later, we hear from LSU, like, hey, we need to make this happen. And so it was just kind of like, these people that were reaching out are great, but it was just funny because it's, you know, even people working in the licensing side of college sports are competitive people because they're working within college sports, you know? And so that for me, that was kind of a whoa moment when you're getting LSU who just, you know, especially at the time they're reaching out, they just had the Joe Burrow season, reaching out to us saying like, hey, we want to make something happen. We love what you guys do, as opposed to, you know, not even a year prior, I was begging some FCS schools like, hey, can you please just take a flyer on us? Like, I promise we'll do a great job. So that was a pretty cool moment.
So for the brands that aren't with y'all yet, I know that Matt Kaufelt, one of the famous harassers of Home Field Apparel, is on the call right now. But I am curious, if you don't have a brand yet, but you know that you want that brand, or a fan wants to see that line get pushed onto home field, how can they change that? And what can they do to be useful in getting that license for y'all and encouraging you, hey, that's a brand that we want to see? What's the best avenue for a fan to do that?
That is a great question. And I always lead off my answer to this by saying, be incredibly respectful to whoever you are talking to. If just talking to anyone in general, it's a great life rule. But you know, if you're reaching out to our customer service team to say, hey, we'd love to see this school, Please don't yell at them. They're wonderful people who have hard jobs and they do a great job. But beyond that, so as you mentioned, JD, we're in the middle of Big News Saturday season 4. And so this is week 7. I've lost count already. We have like 7 weeks left of this. So if you don't see your school on there, you know, there's potential that there's a strong potential, especially if they're a bigger P5 institution, that they will be launched prior to the end of the season. If they're not, I would say first reach out to us to ask for context. I would say the thing not to do is scream at an athletic director or licensing director online, or hopefully not an email, because, you know, nobody likes being screamed at. That's not a nice thing to do. And it probably won't get you the results you want. But I would say reach out to us first so we can maybe provide some context. And then, you know, some schools want to hear, like, some licensing directors want you to reach out. Others are just bombarded and it's just not helpful and it just makes them upset because it's a hard job. So I'd say reach out to our team first, fill out a form on our website just so we know. And that's helpful as well so we can say, hey, XYZ licensing director, we had this many people search for your school on our website in the last month and this many people fill out a form. We know there's demand. We'd love to start a conversation. So I will say the schools that won't or haven't licensed us are fewer and further between now. But yeah, if you don't see your school, reach out to our team and we can maybe provide some more context and then hopefully package that as we go to a school.
So I was just curious about obviously the early schools you worked with, the smaller one. How did that mm-hmm. go about? I mean, how did you reach out to them? Or, I mean, I imagine to an extent, they get ignored all the time. So was it just, yeah. were they happy just to hear you or was it just less convincing?
You know, it depended on the school. Again, the smaller the school, the less the resources. So odds are licensing probably falls to the assistant AD of marketing at a said school. And it might be one of the 30 tasks they have to do, including like game day ops and some branding stuff and just communications in general and a ton of other responsibilities that take priority over licensing for them. So for some, we just wouldn't hear back from, but then others would catch the vision. You know, one of my favorite small schools we've ever done is Slippery Rock. As mentioned earlier, Tulane was a great school to work with. They really got the vision and, you know, they wanted these logos. A lot of these schools know they have these great logos to put out in the marketplace, but for whatever reason, nobody's put them out for them yet. And so we were pretty welcome among the smaller schools. And that's one thing we are trying to do a better job of this year. Just been so hard with scaling and growing so much to make sure we're giving the requisite attention to all schools. And so, you know, we had a great Montana State launch in January for the Brawl of the Wild. That was fun. You know, a Big East school, so it's not even like quote small school sports wise is DePaul. We had a great launch. So yeah, I mean, it's we found we have a little more flexibility with the smaller schools because people haven't given them as much attention.
You know, that kind of transitions. One of the questions that was posed when we announced that this Twitter chat was going to be happening, one of our Reddit users, M. Jackson GT, I'll just read his statement. The good brand, I've got quite a few of their shirts, super comfy. One thing I'd be interested in is if they have data on how often the average fan gets stuff from different teams and if there is any rationale. For example, I have Georgia Tech shirts, but also a Slippery Rock shirt. Do fans cross divisions or conferences more than they buy within the same conference?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. We've tried to formulate some data around that because it's hard, right? How do you code someone as a fan of one school over the other, right? Are they maybe buying for relatives? So you see a lot of, here in Indiana, you see a lot of, oh, there's an order with Indiana State, Ball State, and Purdue. Right. Maybe you went to IU, your sister went to Purdue and your dad went to Ball State. Right. But we do see the thing we see a lot of is major P5 institution plus fun school like UC Irvine Surfing Anteater or Tulane Green Wave or Slippery Rock, you know, all those things you had said. So we see a lot of that. Honestly, a lot of it ends up being like fashion based. There's a whole other segment of people we have. Like I just fulfilled an order today that was 12 pieces, one from each a different school, and I could tell no rhyme or reason. I think they just liked them because they looked good. I mean, I'm standing here wearing a Tennessee shirt right now, and my lasting memory of Tennessee is ending the 9 Windiana season in the Gator Bowl. So, you know, I don't have like the warmest feelings toward Tennessee football for ruining my Indiana football dreams. But, you know, it's more of a fashion choice for a lot of people than anything. So there are people who won't wear anything outside their school, but there is a really healthy segment of our audience who just buys. You know, that's the thing we tell schools all the time. Like, you will find with a Big News Saturday, we're not just selling to your fans. Like, 25% of the purchases will be people who did not attend your school or cheer for your school. And we see that every Big News Saturday. So
are you waiting for that moment where somebody completely out of left field has one of your shirts on for a random school, like, you know, I don't know, Kardashian or something, or on the runway of Milan, somebody who sells shoes just decided to put a shirt like that on one of their models?
Yeah, no, that's for sure going to happen. No, it's funny. There's someone in our neighborhood who owns, like, I've noticed, because I don't say anything, which is strange, but like someone who lives on my street or neighborhood who owns 6 or 7 different schools. And so it's funny because I get to see that in real life, but they don't know I'm me, and I try to keep that private, but it's pretty funny.
Speaking of Slippery Rock, did you at least notice like an uptick in terms of a lot of Michigan zip codes were ordering Slippery Rock shirts just because of the connection there between those schools?
Oh, that was on purpose. We launched Slippery Rock because we loved the Rock logo, but we also were very much so trying to show Slippery Rock, or Michigan, I should say, that we had Michigan fans that followed us that wanted their school. So when we were able to say, like, that was a very conscious choice to launch Slippery Rock for a double pronged reason, because we were able to say, hey, we just launched Michigan State, and we saw Slippery Rock literally sold 3 times as much as our Michigan State launch. Like, there are people who want to buy Michigan gear from us and are buying Slippery Rock instead, which that was a fun data point to show them. For those who don't know, Michigan has a affinity for Slippery Rock, and the score of the Slippery Rock football game is announced at every home football game. It's a really fun tradition.
So that is a brilliant marketing move.
Thank you.
So, Connor, I know you you started a bit in marketing yourself. I know you did an internship at a very, you know, for a large mega company, pretty fashion forward at Target. Did you work at all in the fashion area of that at the headquarters? I mean, I've been on that floor before. I don't want to get too much into the details of my connection to the company. But I was just curious about that, because it's interesting to see how home field approaches it. And then some of the things I've seen that, especially, gosh, I mean, I'm a bit older than you, but like, you know, in the 90s, how that company kind of started to push into kind of fashionable things at affordable, you know, at affordable price range.
Yeah, you did your research there. That's great. Yeah, I did intern at Target for a summer in college as a business analyst there. I was on the C9 team. So, you know, they're working with Hanes for the Champion brand.
I know their trademark. Athletic wear. Got that trademarked.
Yep, there you go. But, you know, so that was the team I was on. And, you know, a lot of it was just experience, too, of, you know, running it in college. One of the biggest things I'm grateful for is just, I feel like I will very easily admit if I don't know anything to someone, and I'll just ask them, hey, teach me. And so in college, I just found a local screen printer. I was like, I know nothing about printing. If I pay you a few dollars and like I'll do stuff for you, will you just like teach me how this works? You know? And so a lot of it was just experiential. Yes, Target definitely provided a great framework in terms of, you know, how buying teams work and how assortments work and how you should approach turn and whatnot. But I think it highlighted the most for me was, man, they hold a ton of inventory. How can I structure whatever I want to do to not hold that much inventory? And so that's actually one of the printing techniques we use, is that we can hold a lot of blank inventory. I mean, we still have a decent amount of finished good inventory currently that we're trying to cut back on, but you know, how can we hold as little finished good inventory as possible while maintaining a good experience? So that experience was good for me at Target to see how a billion-dollar corporation ran. I had some great mentors when I was in college. One of my professors used to be the CMO at Fossil and just provided me a wealth of information, and just leaned on him a lot in terms of like, hey, who should I talk to about marketing for this? Or even licensing, he provided some great contacts that he knew. So yeah, I would say even more than the internship experience, just having people around me that were willing to help me and answer my thousands of questions was the biggest leg up I had.
So quickly, just to derail from that, I know that you just mentioned the magic of making sure that you have the right inventory on you. With your new warehouse, how much inventory do you think that you traditionally like keep on you at one time? I know you mentioned the thousands of shirts that go out the door, but like at any given time, how much inventory is in your warehouse?
Man, you were asking the million-dollar question. Again, someone in the warehouse is on this chat and probably laughing his ass off because we're doing an inventory count on Thursday. But yeah, we have vacillated a lot. You know, we've gone from holding no inventory at all, like finished good, and just like, we're going to print everything on demand. And that's how we got super far behind. And then we were like, you know what, we're never going to let a customer experience that again and our team because it's super stressful. So then we went to holding a ton of finished good inventory because we know no matter what, no matter how great your 15th best-selling design is, just the way human nature works, you know, 80% of the sales are going to go to your top three selling designs for a school. And so we've tried to figure out the right formula. I would say typically per school, per larger school, 2 to 4 of the 15 shirts we have printed in advance, just because we know how it shakes out percentage-wise every single year. And so in terms of like raw numbers, there's, I mean, a few thousand that we have sitting there ready to go because we know the Slippery Rock shirt is going to sell always. The UC Irvine shirt is going to sell always. The Indiana Bison shirt is always going to sell. And so it'd be silly to keep printing things on demand. That'd be more efficient to print in advance. But I hope that answers the question.
Yes, very much.
It does. So, you know, kind of going there, you're known for quality in the product itself, mm-hmm. not just fun design, but the shirts are solid. How do you go about mm-hmm. kind of selecting where you source your shirts from? How much work goes yeah. into that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, at first, when you start a brand, you can't make your own product from scratch unless you have just tons of money. So we found a great – I tested over 40 shirts initially, both in terms of how they felt. Did they shrink? How was the sizing? How did they take ink? Before in 2017 to 18, 40 different shirts to pick. And I picked 20 different sweatshirts to find the hoodie we used. And then we used that for a couple of years and you just private label them. That's quite common. A couple years ago, we decided, hey, we need to develop our own blanks for both costing and like we just want to make some adjustments. You know, we really like the hoodie we had, but the sleeves were a little long. We want to adjust that. Our drawstrings like went down to your waistband, basically. We wanted to adjust that. And so we found some manufacturers that not only made a great product at a fair price, but also, you know, met our corporate social responsibility standards, which are really high, you know, in terms of how they pay their workers, in terms of how sustainably sourced their garments are, that they're not wasting a ton. And so with COVID, the supply chain thing you hear, while annoying, is extremely real. It took way longer to develop product, 3 times longer than normal. But yeah, so in 2020, we started developing our own product. And in 21, we were rolling out our own product. And so we were able to bring sweatshirts in 2021. And then we were finally, after a year and a half of development, able to bring our own t-shirts in this year that are, you know, we designed from the studs. So yeah, I mean, when you do that, you're ordering, I mean, for us, it's about 60,000 shirts at a time. And so you have to make the right decisions because wow. you can't just go order like, oh, I need to order 2,000 more. We were a little bit off there. Like you got to order 60,000 again. And that's a lot of cash up front, months and months and months before you ever see it. Right. So even when you're profitable, right, if you want to talk finance, you know, you got to figure out cash flow and all that good stuff. But yeah, it's a fun experience though, because, you know, you get to create your own. We're creating more products now. You know, we sent out a survey to our customers of not offering that you want us to offer. And, you know, we've tested a few of those things already. You saw a Hawaii mug probably a couple of weeks ago online, and we did a pennant last week with Indiana. Well, there's tons of other products we're developing currently, and it's just really fun to create something from scratch. I mean, I'm just a person with a marketing degree. I didn't study fashion or anything, but it's been fun to work, you know, with people who really know textiles and making something incredibly comfortable that will last for a long time.
You mentioned kind of the 80-20 rule that basically three designs are going to do the bulk of your sales. We've done some logo offerings on the subreddit for users. If they, you know, if their team did, had some kind of an achievement, we give them an alternate kind of flair they can put beside their username, and they get to pick those. They vote on it in a poll, and usually, you know, you kind of have the sense of what's probably going to be right at the top of the choices, but sometimes one will just really surprise you. Has there been a notable one for your team where you thought for sure this is going to be, you know, kind of, you know, not in the top three, and then all of a sudden the popularity just explodes?
Yes. The rule of thumb for us, typically the shirts that do best for us, is when there's a mascot on it, and a different mascot. So the thing that jumped to my mind immediately was our Notre Dame collection. We had two shirts tie for the best-selling shirt, and we print them in advance. And I used to literally guess. I used to be very good at this. Now that we've grown bigger, sample size has gotten much bigger, and I've actually somehow gotten worse at guessing. But we'd say, oh, well, this is going to be the bestseller, so print X amount, and this is going to be the seventh bestseller, so print Y amount. Now we print the same across the board and just know we're going to sell through it eventually. But this was back in the day when I was still guessing. And so I guessed one of the two bestsellers. It was our Clashmore Mike shirt for Notre Dame, a dog wearing a football helmet. I mean, come on. And it's for Notre Dame, who has had a leprechaun mascot. That was an easy guess. But the shirt that I thought would be last, because it didn't have a mascot on it at the time, and it was on a Kelly Green shirt, and that, yes, Notre Dame loves their Kelly Green, of course, but it's a tougher color to wear for some, was this Onward to Victory shirt. And it tied as our best selling shirt, and we had printed the least amount of it. And so, yeah, you know, that caught me on my heels. And then it happened a couple more times, right, throughout the season, to the point where, you know, we do what we do now, where we're going to print an even number across the board. If one surprises us, that's wonderful. We'll just go print more, I suppose. But we were so far behind on the first few ones. And, you know, we're printing these 4 or 6 weeks in advance. So you're kind of SOL when it sells a ton more. It's not like you can go on the Monday and print them all. You have to, you know, it takes a little bit of time. And so we just have to catch up.
Connor, I know that we are almost to the 9 o'clock hour. Really appreciate you coming on for quite a bit to talk about your company, your business, and everything that you've done into making these shirts. But I do have one follow-up that I absolutely have to ask. Yes. Children's clothing, the onesies, the kids' shirts. I feel like every single person that I talk to asks about when they get like some kind of kids' line to put their kids into something like that. Is that a product line, or when you go into stuff like the mugs or the joggers or something else like that, what's the decision of going into a product like that?
No, that's a great question. So, I mean, we definitely get a lot of kids' requests. We are still waiting to fill out the majority of our schools first before, you know, moving to a bunch of other product categories. But it is talking to our people, right? Seeing what they want, you know. You exist as a company to solve a problem for people. And like, look, we make t-shirts. We're not elevating the world's consciousness or, you know, solving, not creating the cure for cancer. We fully understand that when we say we're solving problems. But if people want to, there are a ton of people who want their kids to wear home field and they were willing to pay for it, you know, that's something we have to consider, right? So, you know, we sent that survey out. It was up there in terms of categories people were requesting. I mean, it's part, you know, can we make it? And it's part, can we get licensed for it? You know, different schools have different restrictions. But yeah, no, I mean, kids are definitely an area that we've been looking into for sure, especially given that our consumer base, you know, whether it's late 20s, early to mid 30s, starting to have kids already has kids, you know, and that, we figure that number is going to only grow.
All right, I'll ask you one last question, then we'll go ahead and let you go. I know anybody who knows about home field through podcasts knows that you are very open about letting people do live reads on however they want to read it, promote the products.
Yes.
Do you listen to any of them? And if so, what has been your favorite, just wild, off-the-wall ad read? I know it's probably going to come from something like Shutdown Fullcast, but when it comes to just like the openness of the reads, what's been your favorite read that's come back to you?
Yeah, you know, you said the Fullcast is the Fullcast and Splits on Duo and some great other ones. There's some local Indiana podcasts that we sponsored for years. There's the Bucket Problem, which is a Michigan podcast that we sponsor, and they like to make fun of Indiana a lot in our ad reads. But I'll say one time with the Shutdown Fullcast, look, we sponsor a ton of podcasts, and so like it's literally impossible for me to listen to every single one every week. But I remember one time I was listening to Fullcast, and it was the second live read that we had done. So I was really trying to pay attention. And our beloved Ryan Nanny literally did not say what home field did. He did not say we sold college t-shirts. He said, like, this company out of Indianapolis, they have these all these really cool logos. It's really comfortable, whatever. He did not say what the product was. And I remember I didn't know him as well at the time. Now I would just text him and laugh about it. But then I just remember sending an email like, hey, really appreciate your guys' partnership. Next time, could you say what we sell on the ad read? he was very funny about it and very gracious about it. There was another time that he said he had a constitutional right to not wear a shirt. But if he has to wear a shirt, he'd wear home field. It's very up their alley. But a lot of the ad reads, people find really great transitions into the ad reads because they know we're so out and proud about being Indiana people. So they'll like, just like, you know, right now when people are doing, it happened the other day on the Bucket Problem, they were doing conference previews for the Big Ten. And they were talking about how bad Indiana is going to be this year. And then they're like, okay, and our sponsor, home field. And they'll just transition into that. So yeah, we, our MO is like, hey, you know your audience better than us. And if you can get them to buy t-shirts, better than us probably too. So yeah, you say what we do however you want to, within reason, of course.
That's great. Hey, Connor, thank you so much for joining us. This is a really interesting conversation. And I hope you enjoyed it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Really appreciate you guys having me on for just, you know, helping put the word out about home field. It's always so helpful when people do that. You know, it's funny. I think people think we're much bigger than we actually are. Look, we've grown a lot and it's a ton of fun, but people think we're like, I don't know, massive now. And so just knowing like, yeah, we're just a fun, small little team in Indiana that has a great time, loves the Hoosiers and other teams, I suppose. There's a guy whose birthday today who loves Purdue that works for home field. I am contractually obligated to say that. But no, we love interacting in the college football ecosystem, especially on Twitter. I know you guys are a big part of that. So yeah, thanks for having us and really appreciate your guys' time and being able to just talk for an hour about t-shirts. Always love doing that.
We appreciate it. And it's clear from the product that you guys really enjoy what you do. And I think that's important. When you love what you do, it always tends to translate into something special. So we see that with home field. So thanks so much. And thanks to all of you out there. Thanks to JD and Sirius for co-hosting. My name is Bob Akayeri. This was RCFB Talk 39. You know, we have a special RCFB Talk coming up on Thursday. We're going to be hosting Cincinnati's Director of Athletics, their AD, John Cunningham, for a special morning RCFB Talk. So that's going to be interesting. It's going to be at 10:30 a.m. Eastern on Twitter Spaces. Just like this, it's going to be automatically recorded and shared immediately afterwards. So if you can't be there for it, or if you heard this interview with Connor Hitchcock and you want to share it with somebody, you can just share the link and boom, it'll still be there as soon as this ends. But yeah, if you're around and you want to listen to our talk with Cincinnati's John Cunningham, that should be a really good conversation. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, especially with the Bearcats after that incredible season last year and, you know, their future moving to the Big 12. So that'll be a part of it. So thanks, everyone. Thanks to Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. It's been a good Tuesday night. We'll be back again next Tuesday night, and we appreciate all of you. Thanks for joining us. Have a great night.